Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to Pop Culture, the podcast that puts soft drinks at the top of the menu. I'm Kat Brown, arts journalist and author of It's Not a Bloody Trend, Understanding Life as an ADHD Adult, and with me is my divine co-host, it's Helen O'Hara.
Hello, how are you doing?
Do you want to describe what you do, just in case people haven't had it hammered through their head yet?
Sure, I am also an author, I guess, of mostly film-related books and a film journalist, mostly for Empire Magazine, but not exclusively. If you're looking to hire someone, hire me!
It's freelance month, folks. Yes, it's January, when freelancers mostly just sit around going, oh God, why did I make this career-based decision? Although actually, January has got off to quite a crackingly weird start.
It's been very, very busy. It's been extremely busy for you, Kat. You have been doing glamorous things this week. I feel like everyone needs to know this because your book, as you mentioned, is out February 1st.
Yes.
Very soon now.
Horrifyingly soon.
I know. And you have been glamouring yourself up this week. You have been getting dolled up to have photo shoots taken. Tell me more.
It was amazing. I was so nervous about it beforehand, not necessarily having my picture taken. I know that I do not have good photo face and that I cannot pose to save my life. But being 6'1" and not a twig is essentially something that I felt not necessarily self-conscious about, but very aware of. I actually had a piece in The Times this weekend about being extremely tall, pegged to Nicole Kidman, saying in the early years of her career, she lied about being 5'11" because people just wouldn't audition her.
Yeah.
As it turned out, the stylist had ordered in lovely shoes, beautiful clothes. It was an all-female shoot, picture editor, photographer, makeup artist and hair and everything. It was really lovely. Disappointing lack of soft drinks.
Oh.
Not gonna lie, it was quite a short shoot. Me and my publicist left everybody getting on with building the actual set and went and did a coffee run.
Very wise.
So I had a very nice flat white.
Your publicist is
my
so
publicist.
Glamorous.
I know, outrageous. I can see how power goes to people's heads very quickly, and I'm actually looking very much at Harry on The Traitors to remind myself that you can be cock of the walk or having a photo shoot 1 minute and then potentially banished the next.
Banished. Humbled. Exactly. Yes.
And what's been going on with you this week, Helen?
Well, this was exciting. So I am part of the Empire podcast where we talk about films every week. We also do all sorts of other podcasts as well, spoilers and interview specials and things like that. But we've been doing our weekly podcast now for 12 years.
What? Genuinely?
Yes, genuinely. We take 2 weeks off a year over Christmas.
Oh my goodness.
So last night we celebrated Empire 600.
Oh my God.
Live in London, we had an audience come in. We recorded on stage at King's Place in London, which is a fantastic venue. Absolutely lovely people. We had movie stars, actual movie stars.
Shut the front door.
I know, come along. So we had Mia McKenna-Bruce, who made an astonishing impression in How to Have Sex last year. If people haven't seen that, it's not a sex film. Don't be put off. It's very much an examination of people coming of age and everything else. It's a beautiful, beautiful, amazing film, and she is heartbreakingly good in it. So we had her come along. She's a delight. She told me an incredible story about Coca-Cola, which I may tell you in a minute. We also had Ray Winston, proper London geezer, been
legend.
In everything, absolute movie legend. And we had the human delight, that is Tom Hiddleston.
Amazing.
Loki, God of Mischief himself, was there. We were chatting backstage about Shakespeare because I set myself a challenge a bunch of years ago to try and see all of the Shakespeare plays live, which was helpful actually because I actually saw him do Coriolanus, which was amazing. I now have a Shakespeare buddy in my head, at least.
What's his Shakespeare tally? He's starred in a few of them. Has he seen all of them?
I don't know if he's seen all of them, but when I said Henry VIII was the worst one, he nodded sagely. So he is at least aware, he's at least read them all.
Loved it.
He knows that Henry VIII is the worst one. If you are a Shakespeare scholar out there and disagree with me, I have to respectfully say you're wrong. I hated it so much. All the rest are great. But yeah, just a wonderful puppy dog of a human being.
Mia also sounds like one of the goodies. And please now tell me the Coca-Cola story.
She's not as young as she looks in the film. I just want to say that because she plays, I think, a sort of 16, 17-year-old in the film. She is not in real life. She is a mother. She is a proper grown-up human being. I want to make that clear because the story I'm about to tell you took place when she was younger and you may think that was yesterday. So, and she's a very petite person as well. Absolutely beautiful human being. We had a fridge there, actually, of drinks for guests. So we went out and bought some extra Diet Coke and Coke Zero, which, you know, most people drink. There was some lovely San Pellegrino, Fruity Waters, those arancini drink. No, that's not right. No,
arancini would be a horrendous drink.
That would
those
be
the rice balls.
Those would be the rice balls.
Aranciata, something?
Yes, that's right. I've been studying Italian and you wouldn't know it from how I got that wrong.
I technically have an Italian degree, but you wouldn't know that. Anyway.
Well, she was having one of the orange drinks, basically, and she was saying that she's never really drunk Coke. And we all expressed a bit of surprise because it's kind of unusual to never have really drunk Coke. Mm. But it turns out that this is because she had a very vivid early memory of a certain UK celebrity, a sort of, you know, TV level celebrity in the early noughties. There was a big tabloid fuss, if you remember, because this person had done a huge amount of cocaine and had actually lost the, I think it's the septum of the nose, had been basically eroded by this cocaine use. And young, tiny baby Mia McKenna-Bruce, yes, got it into her head that this had happened because the lady concerned had drunk too much Coke.
Oh, sweet baby bear.
I know. And so she had just never really drunk Coke as a result. And even once this misunderstanding had been explained, by that point, you know, she was sort of set in her ways and was still a little bit freaked out and was like, but are we sure? Are we sure it was the other kind of Coke and not the drink that did this to her? Why take the chance?
Why take the chance indeed?
I hope Mia doesn't mind me telling that story, but I thought it was just about the cutest thing that I've ever heard in my entire life. And like I say, she's an amazing actress. She's up for the BAFTA Rising Star Award this year. By the way, just another sign of how nice Tom Hiddleston was. He was giving her lots of advice on just enjoy yourself at the BAFTAs. Genuinely, it is the being nominated that counts. And you don't realise that your first time, but it really is. Absolutely lovely people. I had a wonderful time.
Oh, speaking of cinema as well, I don't think we flagged this at the time, but you and I had the great delight of being on Picture House Cinema's The Love of Cinema podcast this month, which is a lovely roundup of some of the month's best films. I'd managed to see two of them because I was recording my audiobook at the time, so sat rapt as Helen told me about Poor Things for one. And what was the other one that I'd not seen?
The Holdovers? Had you seen
The Holdovers? Yes, The Holdovers, which I still haven't seen. I'm absolutely gagging to now.
It's a wonderful, wonderful film. So, yeah, so we talked about those two and the two that you had seen.
Yes, Priscilla, which is smashing. I didn't really notice any soft drinks in that, so I can't do a tenuous link back to here. And Not All the Small Things, that is a Blink-182 song.
All of Us Strangers. All of Us Strangers.
Oh, my God, which is the Andrew Scott film with Paul...
Mescal,
thank you so much. God, ADHD brain going on. Loads of BAFTA nominations, but bewilderingly not for Andrew Scott.
I know. I genuinely, it's the big oversight of the BAFTAs this year for me. Andrew Scott is terrific in that film. If you're listening, Andrew, I'm sure you are, and you happen not to drink or happen to ever take a break from drinking, do come and talk to us just so we can right this wrong and give you the attention you deserve for that role, because it's an absolutely astonishing performance and he absolutely could be there.
I firmly believe that being on our podcast with makeup and not being nominated for a BAFTA.
It's pretty much the same thing, isn't it?
Just don't look up anything about All of Us Strangers, now that I have actually pronounced it correctly. Do go along and see it. It is just gorgeous, glorious, and will make you cry buckets, but not in a harrowing way, which I think is quite important.
Today, Kat, we are drinking something called, and I have no idea how to pronounce it really, I think it's Lovo. Mm-hmm. It's spelled L-O-V-E-A-U. So I'm going with the French bit for the last, because this is a sparkling water, apparently infused with raspberry, strawberry and blueberry. It is unsweetened, it has zero calories and zero sugar. I'm hoping it's nice because I like all those words. I like water. I like berries. If this is tasty, I'm in seventh heaven.
They have also helpfully put the pronunciation in a sweet little pink speech bubble on the back.
So they have. Well done, me.
Which is very nice. Oh, this is nice as well. We support a cause close to our hearts, making a donation to UK diabetes charities for every can sold. This is epic, so even if I don't actually like it, I still love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, here we go. Okay. I am actually getting berries in this. Mm. Now, because it's unsweetened and because it is very watery, it does a little bit taste like, you know, I've washed the berries and then I'm drinking the water that I washed them in. It's a hint of berry rather than a full sweet experience.
I still think there's more taste to it than Ugly or Dash.
That's true.
It's still nowhere near enough flavour that I would like, but I will stick to feel good for that. But I can taste like all of those flavours and they taste like legitimate fruit as opposed to the hint of a fruit that is then passed through.
Yeah, like you had a smoothie and then you poured a bit of water in the glass and sort of are knocking it back from the same glass. It does taste like real fruit and not just, you know, you used to get those flavoured sparkling waters that were flavoured with something very weird and very artificial. It doesn't taste that way. It does taste like fruit, but it tastes like a hint of it rather than the full whammy.
Yes, exactly that. So yeah, this is pretty good. You could neck this and not really have any problems, but I don't think I love it. But that is, again, just because of my preferences regarding fruit-flavoured sparkling waters.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
There are a frankly ridiculous array.
They are growing. I think, it's the kind of stuff that we talk about in this podcast all the time. It's people wanting something that isn't very sugary, something they can sit and drink and sip at the same rate that people are sipping their alcohol. I think in that respect, it would probably work. You could sit with this on a train opposite your friend with the G&T in a can and it would sort of work. Not a huge taste moment.
No.
I haven't had any exciting drinks this week. I feel like I've failed us all as a podcast host because I've been to work, essentially, and I've gone to several screenings that haven't had any drinks available. And the one screening I went to a screening of Mean Girls, which was very fun, the new Mean Girls musical film, but that was sponsored by, I think, Malibu. So they had loads of those, which was great for the drinkers, but not so great for me personally. And nothing against it. I understand Malibu has sponsored the event, therefore they want to put their drinks in front of people. I understand that. But yeah, I was basically left with the choice of Diet Coke or water.
Ah, the two staples, back again.
Back once again. So I will try and do better this coming week and actually try some interesting new drinks.
Yes. You have, however, profiled somebody who surprisingly turns out to be quite a legendary teetotaler. I had no idea. Please tell me more.
I wrote a profile in Empire magazine this month about Mae West. And Mae West was, for those of you who don't know the name, was a film star of the sort of 1930s. At one point, she was the second highest paid person in the US, behind, I think, only Rockefeller. And she was a massive, massive success. And she was known for being, by the standards of the time at least, very sort of sexually suggestive. You know, she was, I don't think she ever said a single entendre in her life. I think every single word out of her mouth was a double entendre, but she didn't drink. She said that basically alcohol cuts down on who you are. Why would I need to cut down on who I am? Was her line about it. One of sort of history's famous, unlikely, if you like, teetotalers, because she projected so much appetite in every other aspect of her life that I think she's one of those people that people would never think was teetotal. And you know, the way people associate not drinking with abstinence, I think we've talked about this before, but I have a lot of people, old friends, maybe you haven't seen me in a few years, and let's say we go out for dinner and they go, oh, Helen, you're vegetarian, aren't you? They associate me with some kind of abstinence and they're not quite sure what. There is this perception of non-drinking being a bit, you know, possibly holy, possibly, you know, abstemious. Very, very holy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Someone like Mae West just goes to show it's not necessarily that. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. It's not a moral thing. It's just sometimes I don't particularly like drinking. I don't particularly like the effect it has on me. I don't mind if you do it. I'm totally fine with that. All of her films basically take place in, you know, speakeasies and nightclubs and everything else. She was very comfortable, very at home being around drinkers. She just didn't do it herself, you know? So,
there's something
what a woman.
To be said for not needing help in that way. I very much went around this in the wrong way because I always associated not drinking with some kind of lack. Like, oh, you're missing out or blah, 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 and that sort of thing. Or, oh, but cocktails are delicious. Wine is delicious. Both of which are true.
True, yeah.
But sometimes I think certain ways of using alcohol can also be illustrative of a lack.
Mm.
whether it's reassurance or comfort in a situation or something. So that has really cheered me up.
Wasn't she, is that a gun in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me?
She also said, when I'm good, I'm very good, but when I'm bad,
I'm better.
Gorgeous.
That was to Cary Grant, by the way, who she cast opposite her as her love interest in one of his very early films. The woman had taste.
We have been, I would not like to say bombarded, because it's January and nobody's got the energy for that, but lots of people have been in touch to tell us about some new non-alcoholic bar openings, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
One which opened a little while ago, but still very much going to flag up, particularly for anybody around Leeds. The Functional Drinks Club has opened in Otley in North Leeds and has kombucha on tap, which sounds right up my street.
Hooray.
And then there's a new non-alcoholic bar that's just opened in Manchester.
Yeah, I think that one's Love From.
Gorgeous.
Absolutely fantastic to see that there are many more options becoming available to people. And I think we are going to have to do some road tripping soon and see if we can get to some of these places and try some of their selections. The fact is, like we say, a few years ago, you simply wouldn't have had enough options to fill a bar, and certainly not enough drinkable options to fill a bar. So just the existence of these places is already really exciting. Can't wait to go and visit a few more of them.
Yeah, and it's really nice seeing some of the pop-ups coming as well, because they may not be permanent, but it's a great way for people to be able to test the water and see what the call is there. And I think we're going to arrange to go and see lovely Laura Willoughby from Club Soda at the Club Soda Tasting Rooms pop-up in central London soon.
Yeah.
And that'll be amazing. That will be a little bit like going to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
I'm pretty sure it's the same effect. Yeah.
Bar just filled with drinks for us. How fabulous. Today's guest is an international DJing icon. She was one of the first female DJs at the Hacienda in 1992, and her career has spanned every country imaginable. Although you may not know it, because she has been written out of much of the history written about club culture. In 2022, DJ Paulette was the winner of the DJ Mag Top 100 Lifetime Achievement Award, among others, and her new book, Welcome to the Club, The Life and Lessons of a Black Woman DJ, is published on January 26th by Manchester University Press. And it's both a memoir and a fantastic history of club life, music, DJing, and how women, and black women especially, can be silenced by not being able to take their place in history. Paulette ditched alcohol a few years ago and now favours tea and Nozeco at gigs. And in this interview, she tells us the real secret to dancing sober, which was actually quite life-changing for me. The lessons she took from clubbing at 15, finding something you like to drink rather than focusing on replacements, and how to take your deserved place in the world. Here's DJ Paulette. Well, DJ Paulette, welcome to Pop Culture Podcast. We're delighted to have you today.
Thank you for inviting me. I do love talking about the mission of being sober in this environment, because when I decided to make the big break with drinking, am I going to be able to work the same as I've always been working? Because I consider myself quite an interesting and funny drinker. And I like drinking. I like alcohol. I didn't give up because I didn't like alcohol. I gave up drinking because I knew it would be better for me to do that. So there's a kind of shift in perspective, really, because most people, when they give up, it's because they've been really ill or they've had a health crisis. I didn't have any of that particularly, but I just knew for the things that were happening for me, it would be better for me and I would feel better if I stopped. But I just absolutely loved drinking. So finding that place in myself where I could actually work and DJ in hospitality and events culture, where it was on tap, literally on tap. I had free drinks all night, or I had a rider of 20, 50 pounds, wherever, it's different everywhere. And people were making cocktails and trying them out and saying, try this. People would buy me a drink because they liked the music that I was playing. To stop that, am I actually going to be the same person? Because it's part of me linked to being a little bit drunk. And there's the fear that you're suddenly going to be very different, very boring, that people aren't going to connect to you on the same level because you know that you're not going to connect to them on their level. You can't connect to them on their level. As soon as you stop drinking, you're not a drunk anymore. You're not leery and loud. All of a sudden, everything becomes an overstimulation. Your mates become an overstimulation. It's like, whoa, why are they talking so loud and repeating themselves? And you notice the things that people do when they're drunk, but you didn't notice when you were doing it because you were doing it too. And then suddenly it becomes this affront, like, oh my God, they're just so loud. Why do you have to be so loud? It's like, because they're drunk and you're not. The biggest mountain to climb was this change in personality, getting back into your own real skin and being in it every second of the day and then not being a remove from that person. I am always now very solidly me.
Being a DJ, right? And I'm obviously not, but I'm sort of imagining you're struggling to be in sync with everyone. You're trying to keep the crowd with you. You're trying to tune in almost to an energy, a vibe in the room. So did that become harder, or was it actually that's a different skill set that you find was still there?
The fear is that it's going to be different, that you're not going to be able to connect to people. As I worked in it, I realized that actually I can do this without alcohol. Like, it's to do with me, my intuition, me tapping into that vibe. And I can do that any day of the week. My intuition has to be really sharp. I can walk into a room and know, I call it taking the temperature, so I can feel how it needs to be warmed up. So if I'm playing first, I just need to listen and feel and think for this space, what needs to be done in order to bring this up. I don't know if it's like that for everybody, but it's like that for me. In fact, alcohol is a switch that can sometimes make you misunderstand that. Whereas I think when you're straight, when you're sober, you're very aware of the tiniest shifts in energy and really what's needed. And I know that my playing has improved massively not being drunk.
Wow. So what was alcohol giving you for that very long period during your career and with other people coming up to you and everything?
It does give you a connection to the people that you're working with because they're serving you and you're taking drinks of them. And it's very, in French, there's the word convivial. So it's that friendship, that friendliness, that connection, that when you say, oh, I don't drink, or I just want a tea, there's never a kettle anywhere. So they just kind of look at you like, is she feeling all right? And then it's like, yeah, I am feeling all right, but I just want a tea. And if there's not a tea, what soft drinks have you got? And then they say, water. And I'm like, and then they say, well, we've got Fanta, Lilt and Coke. And I'm like, I don't drink fizzy drinks. What have you got? And then it's the list of nothing, the long list of nothing, or it's the short list of cranberry juice and pineapple juice, and that's your lot. And people think that is good enough for people who are not drinking. And it has been my mission really for people and saying, can you get a non-alc brand, please? What's up with your non? I don't drink non-alc beers. I don't really like the taste of them, but there are many non-alc brands, Seedlip or Liars. There are many non-alc brands, and even lots of the supermarkets have their own non-alc versions of spirits and beers and stuff. So it's like, you don't have to go far. Just go to Sainsbury's and get a bottle of Nozeco. It's like, job done. I think I've diverted, but
No, that's 100% our basic premise for this whole thing is, oh my goodness, I'm so bored of orange juice and cranberry juice.
Yeah, and it was just, I remember it was 2019 and the We Out Here festival had just launched. And it wasn't just We Out Here, because I'd started playing a lot of festivals. And I noticed that in the daytime, you could get a cup of tea and a coffee, water, no non-alc beers, no non-alc options, Coca-Cola, Fanta, Sprite. And then when that was done, that was done. So getting towards the end of the day, I could only drink water. It was like, why does everyone else get a choice of what they want to drink? But then when you say, I don't drink alcohol, it's like, oh, well, there you go. And I think that's one of the things that makes people not go out, because they haven't got a choice. So if I don't drink, I can't sit in a pub with my mate because I've got nothing to drink. It's not interesting to me to drink water all night. It is absolutely not interesting to me to drink Fanta or Lilt all night either. I don't like them. Mm. 2019, I really struggled that year because I was playing a lot of festivals. And even for my rider, I ask for peppermint or chamomile tea, a bottle of Nozeco if I'm going to be there all day. Because it kind of looks to people that are looking at you like you're drinking, but you're not. I mean, sometimes I really play into the tea thing and I have a teapot and a cup and I will make people see that I'm drinking tea. Because I think it's important to send that message across that you don't actually need to be drunk in a club to enjoy the music and the vibe.
That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. You know, what would you sort of say to people who genuinely can't imagine dancing sober? I know people who will not get off the wall until they're three drinks in.
Yeah. You know,
and I feel like there is a mental block for a lot of people.
Yeah, there is. And I had to get into that headset because I'd lost that. I had to remember when I started going clubbing when I was 15 years old, I didn't really like the taste of alcohol. You know, I was 15, so I had a 15-year-old palate. I used to take sweets to nightclubs and hand out mint imperials and didn't think that was weird. You know, and looking back at it, I'm thinking, yeah, it's so cute, but people must have realised straight away that I was underage because I had a bag full of licorice all sorts, a little hit of sugar every now and then was what I needed. And I loved going to clubs and I loved dancing. And I knew when I was 15, 16 years old that I did not need alcohol to have a good time in a nightclub. I had the time of my life from 15 to 18 when I started properly drinking, enjoying nightclubs for the music, the people, the dancing, the friendships. That's why I went out. So I had to remember what that headset was. And it's like, well, what's the difference between then and now? Well, I couldn't really buy it then. So it wasn't natural to me to go to the bar and say, oh, I'll have a vodka and orange or a vodka and apple juice. It's not a natural drink for a 15, 16-year-old to ask for. So it's like, well, how about if I remove that from my head and thinking that I just don't order it? In the beginning, working in bars, I'd be asking them to make me a mocktail. So make me that cocktail, but without the alcohol. But then I thought, but then you're just still trying to drink alcohol. So let's just ask for a fruit drink or let's just ask for a tea and see how that goes. And slowly but surely, I stopped drinking.
I'm very here for your campaign to get more kettles into large dance venues.
Seriously, because I'm telling you, the feeling of having that cup of tea that you really want, especially in a nightclub, especially in a festival atmosphere, it cannot be matched. I don't know whether it's health and safety or what, but if every festival green room could make sure they had a kettle and the tea bags and that somebody at some point during the time that I was playing would bring me, because I can't actually go off stage and I'm just making a cup of tea, just wait.
Anybody else want one?
I should do that though, just ask the front row. It could be a thing. I would love if every green room just had, just as a matter of course, just as natural, not that you had to ask for it, just that it was there. You shouldn't have to ask for it. It shouldn't have to be on my rider. It should just be there.
How essential or how much do you think alcohol contributes to the feeling of a dance floor? Because I haven't investigated this yet, but that's more me being surrounded by lots of people than the concept. Oh, I've seen such a huge rise, particularly in London, of sober raving, whether noon, night.
Yeah.
But part of me still, even after four and a half years not drinking, is a bit like, oh, but how do I get that feeling to go on the dance floor as opposed to just going for it?
Stop being fearful of not enjoying it. The thing is what's in our head, because the feeling is always in you. As soon as you listen to music, the feeling is actually attached to the music. It's not attached to the alcohol.
Yeah,
for sure. We know the effect that drugs can have on people when they're listening to music. So for sure, different drugs have different effects on a dance floor. That is very definite. But whether it makes you more or less likely to dance, I think it's the music that does that. This is a chicken and egg. Is it the music that makes the difference, or is it the alcohol that makes the difference? And if people can actually get into their head, it's me and the music, it's not me and the drink, or it's me and the music, it's not me and the drug. And then they can separate that need for having one or two that'll take the edge off. You don't need that. It's a trick. And it's a trick that things like alcohol and drugs play on you to make you keep drinking.
The key thing I remember for me as a teenager is looking around and, you know, all my friends drank and drink pretty much. So I was kind of used to that. But looking around and sort of realizing, well, nobody's actually looking at how I dance. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares how I dance. Nobody's going to be like, oh, Helen can't dance. Because, like, I'm looking at you all and we're all in the same boat here. We're all... dodgy at times, you know, so and then just let go.
And even if they did, so what? We're all there for the same reason. And if we can't dance today and we can never dance in our entire lifetime, does it matter? Just do what you do.
You see people who are not necessarily technically quote unquote good dancers, but they're clearly having a ball, and nothing is more beautiful, nothing is more joyous.
And it's the release. This is why I say it's more to do with what's in our head than what's in our hand. It's more to do with how we are comfortable being in a space full of people we've never met before and being so vulnerable, because you do kind of put yourself in a very vulnerable space to enjoy and come out of yourself around a lot of people that you don't know. It's the vulnerability that I think scares people. I think that vulnerability became more pronounced after lockdown because we'd been away from people for a long time. So getting that confidence back to just walk onto a dance floor and just dance like nobody's watching, that was hard. And I understand that, but I think it's a lot more to do with vulnerability and the psychology of it more than it's to do with what's in your hand and what might loosen the tongue and loosen the footwork, because that's actually not true.
It's interesting about dance like nobody's watching, because obviously now with TikTok, Instagram, camera phones everywhere, we don't really go to many places where you can't be seen or watched or potentially go viral. And I was just wondering, obviously you are the person at the front of the stage, you are commanding a room full of people. How does your confidence go with being filmed or being watched or all that sort of time?
I don't mind being officially filmed. I don't like having phones pointed at me at all. I think it's an intrusion. I really do think it's an intrusion. It is anyway. I mean, you wouldn't just walk down the road and take pictures of just anybody, but that's what you're doing. When you go into a nightclub and you're pointing a camera phone at somebody, you know, there might be somebody in your area that you don't know, that isn't one of your friends. That's actually quite rude. You're kind of pushing into their world when you shouldn't be in their world. Or you should at least ask for permission. You know, you don't just shove a camera in somebody's face and expect them to like it. And depending on, you know, where I am in my set and how I'm concentrating, I don't like those kind of interruptions. And I don't like having the flash in my eyes. I've got glaucoma anyway. So that is, please do not shine. It's almost like retina burning light in my eyes while you're filming the set.
Yeah.
I think I played quite recently in Sheffield. The club had a no phones on the dance floor policy. And the difference that made. The difference that made to the way people engage with music was massive, because people really got into the music from the first minute. They were on the dance floor. Everybody was having a great time. Everybody was actually really listening to the music. Nobody was filming.
Yeah.
And I know certain clubs are actually starting to take this on board, like Fabric in London, where they have a no phones policy. It's really important. Get rid of phones off the dance floor and you will actually realise that it's nothing to do with alcohol, why people don't dance.
Can't hurt, absolutely. I mean, you've travelled around the world. You're literally an international DJ. You know, have you found places that were better for non-alcoholic options? Have you found places that are worse? You know, what's your impression?
I think everywhere's just as bad as the other. I think everybody's just learning. It feels very much early days for anyone packing anything interesting non-alcoholic. I don't think any one club is worse than the other. I mean, actually, that's wrong. Some are better than others at providing options for people, you know, beyond the Fanta Coke. You know, there are places that have the full range and they have, you know, mixologists that can make the equivalent of an alcoholic cocktail, and you would not know that the alcohol wasn't in it, apart from the fact that you don't wake up with a hangover the next day. But I think in general, no one's worse than the other. And I don't think it's malicious. It's just we're in that learning phase where people have to figure out how many of their crowd are not drinking in order to make it viable to buy in a load of non-alc stuff that they don't want to be stuck with at the end of the party that they can't return. You know, so I know how it works. There's the financial consideration that goes into any of these places providing non-alc. And like I say, nobody likes to get stuck with something that nobody wants to drink or that not enough people want to drink. Mm. Whereas we'd be like, oh, this is Happy Valley. We've got all this choice, but there's not enough of us still to make that a financially viable consideration for a massive festival. But, you know, I noticed like this year at Parklife that they made a lot more provision for people that didn't drink alcohol. And so for me, if they can do it, so can everybody else.
You mentioned palate earlier, and certainly this is a big difference between Helen and I, because Helen has never drunk alcohol. And
ever in your life?
Not really, no.
When you were mentioning like being young and going clubbing and having the sweets and everything, but I absolutely loved this passage in your book about your weekly drinks order.
Yeah, wow.
So anybody else, you'd be like, oh, this, you know, just cheap old vodka and that sort of thing. But we've got three bottles of Puy Fumé, Viognier, three bottles of Bordeaux, Pixanlu, number one favourite red wine from Montpellier or Languedoc, and two bottles of Ruinart champagne, all of which I'm pronouncing horribly. But
okay. There we go. I'll forgive you.
Thank you very much. France won't. But this is,
no, they won't.
DJ Paulette on behalf of France.
I actually saw on Instagram there was a clip of a woman saying, if you can't get this drink in France, it's because you're not pronouncing it right. And she ran through the whole gamut of wines, red wines, white wines, champagnes. And it's like, you pronounce it like this. It's Moët. It's not Moët. It's Moët. Yeah. It's like, and she went through the whole thing. And it's, I was listening to it and I thought, yeah. They're really snobby in France about how you pronounce their drink.
You were drinking very dry, delicious, like whites and champagnes, and then having these really like
heavy,
rich, moody reds, which is fabulous.
Yeah,
and then,
and
as you said, French, then you're presented with Fanta. What do you do?
Yeah,
what do you drink?
Yeah, because I really like the taste. So, and obviously, you know, certain wines go better with certain foods. And I was eating a lot of meat in France and really good steaks. I mean, I don't eat anything like the amount of meat that I ate there here because the quality is different. And, you know, certainly in terms of wines, when I came back to the UK, I kind of started drinking less anyway, because the level of wine that you get in France for a certain price is almost like double or triple the price when you come back. But I really liked heavy, heavy wines. In France, they would say custode, which is like a really, it's like a well-built man. So they'd say, when I ordered my wines, it's like, oh, c'est custode. It's like, yeah, I know, I like it heavy. So coming off that and finding a non-alc equivalent, it was like, I can't find a non-alc equivalent for what goes with certain meats, because there isn't that non-alk equivalent for, well, if I'm having fish, then it's this, and if it's meat, then it's this. You start to realize that you're out of the dinner party game or conversation a little bit, because you're not enjoying the flavors in the same way that they are, and you're not enjoying the meal, the kind of evolution of the meal. You know, I was watching Nigella Lawson's Amsterdam Christmas, and she was like, this shot and this drink and that goes with this. And it's like, you're actually getting really pissed for a meal. And if you don't do that, then your food actually tastes different. Like, the way you're eating is different, and the way you enjoy it is different. And is there an equivalent to a puy-fumé? I don't think there is. I don't think there is a non-alk equivalent to a puy-fumé. I don't think there is a non-alk equivalent to a ruinard or a, you know, I really don't think there is. So I think we have to kind of do away with that like for like idea of not drinking, because you're not going to find it, because in that there has to be that mix of fermentation and alcohol, and you can't match the aging of a whiskey. Like, I don't think you can match a 14-year-old, 12-year-old Macallan, you know, whatever. I don't think you can do that yet, at least, with non-alk.
That's a really good point, though, about not looking to match, because certainly whenever I used to do Dry January or something, I'd be like, right, I need to feel like I'm not missing anything, and I actually also want to be drunk, but without technically having alcohol. From what you're saying about dancing, I suppose, as well, is maybe it's about less escaping into the drink and more about sort of embracing that conviviality and finding ways of getting that conviviality with people.
Exactly, without it being alcohol or drug-led. Rather than say, I'm replacing whiskey with this or gin with that, just find a non-alc drink that you like to drink and get that. So you know what you're going to order when you go to the bar or the pub or the club or whatever, so you feel like you're in the same routine as everybody else that has that immediate go-to. So someone else will say, oh, I'll have a whiskey and coke, or I'll have a JD and whatever, and you'll be like, oh well, I'd like to have a Seedlip, and if they sell Seedlip, can I have an apple juice and cranberry mixed together? And if
that was my go-to for a long time, actually.
And if they say no, then it's like, oh well, what have you got then? Just get that drink you like, rather than trying to find a replacement that isn't there, and that when they give you something that is kind of similar, it's going to be a disappointment, and then you feel like, oh, it's really shit not drinking, actually, I don't like this, and it makes it harder. It's just like, no, just find something you like to drink. It gets easier.
It does get easier. What drink would you put into a non-alcoholic Hall of Fame?
There was a mixologist at Albert Schloss who is just absolutely fantastic, Marcel. And he could make any vegetable and fruit absolutely sing on the palate. He was so good, but he didn't drink.
Right.
So his understanding of what not drinking meant was like totally different to what other mixologists were doing. So I mean, he would present me with mocktails which were just like a work of art, and anything that he made me, I was always putting pictures of it on my Instagram, like, look what I've just got, because he'd just send these drinks up that would be a mixture of cucumber and strawberry, or just make something that was so refreshing and so delicious, and then put a little bit of sweetness in with a vanilla syrup or whatever. He just knew how to mix the flavors around whatever the wheel of flavors was that I was using, and he was just really, really clever. So I would, rather than picking any one drink, I'd say anything that he made.
Anything Marcel makes.
Yeah, and he doesn't do it anymore, which isn't, you know, everybody moves on, but he gave me a lot of really good memories of working in that place, because it just made not drinking an absolute joy. And it actually spoilt me for going anywhere else, because any time I'd ask for a mocktail anywhere else, it was like Marcel's way better.
I think we're all going to be very deep into your Instagram feed after this, Paulette. Just go, where are those drinks? Where is Marcel? I'm just tracking down.
Him.
Where is
You'll
he working
now? He has a proper job. It's so funny.
No. Come back, Marcel.
Come back, Marcel. Yeah. It's like being a chef. You know, being a mixologist is like being a chef, just knowing how to marry one flavor with another. But he was somebody that knew how to do it non-alc without having to get somebody really, really pissed. It's like, no, I just want to make a really nice drink for somebody that's going to make them feel like they're drinking a really nice drink.
That is basically what you have done all your career with music, and arguably what you've done with Welcome to the Club, which is
just a brilliant
read, incredibly atmospheric. Almost like a piece of history as well as your own experience. What would you hope that your reader takes away from reading your book?
I'd like people to realise that history is happening all the time to everybody, and everybody's story is relevant. Silence is the most damaging thing. Staying silent is the most dangerous thing we can do, because in one way it is accepting that people are going to forget our history or our contributions. And women are terrible for doing that, for stepping back and saying, oh, well, it's okay. I got this award, but nobody mentioned it. Or I did this thing, you know, I made this scientific discovery, or I made this astronomical. And it happens in every discipline where women have made the discoveries, but men have taken the sunshine for it. And they've kind of sat back and gone, oh, well, maybe one day they'll put my name on that paper. But they never do. So that's the other message that I want to get is, one, don't accept that. Two, as soon as it happens, say,
ahem,
and say, excuse me, and don't be afraid of being that voice that says, this isn't right, or I want to be included, because men do not have that fear. Men will put their hands up and say, that was me that did that. Men will own their story, and women do not own their story. And what I want people to take away, male, female, whoever, gender, race, whoever, is own your story, own it and tell it. And if nobody wants to publish it, it's 2024 now. You can do it yourself. Put it online, make a noise, be loud. And if you can get it published, even better.
Amen. Well, I think that's a great note to end on. How about you, Kat?
Oh, agreed. That is fabulous. I'm just going to make a ringtone of that last minute. I'm just going to constantly call myself for the first time ever.
Yeah, but do. I mean, I have spent a lot of time being silent, and I think this is what's made the difference. People continually say to me, oh, I can see you're everywhere and I can hear your voice. And it's like, because I'm talking now, because I spent a lot of, or more, it's because I've spent a lot of years being silent about things I shouldn't have been silent about. And that's what I want people to also realize, is that the silence is dangerous. Silence kills. Silence can kill your career. What silence does in terms of even our politics, if we do not say, if we do not vote, we're stuck with that. So if you want change, you've got to start making a noise about it. And if you want to change yourself, you have to start kind of coughing up the furballs. It has been like 7 years of coughing up furballs that I've just been gathering in my stomach for years. And now it's like, it's actually really nice, because all that fur that I was digesting that I shouldn't have been digesting is gone.
It's the best possible palate cleanser to read.
And wash it down with a nice tea.
Thank you so much, Paulette. That was just absolutely amazing.
It's been a pleasure talking to you both.
It has been
anyway.
So lovely talking to you. It's
a real joy. Good luck with the rest of your marathon day.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Press.
Yeah. What a complete delight. That was absolutely fascinating. I am so excited now to go to any event ever and see a DJ with a teapot. That is now my ambition in life. I need to see a DJ with a teapot. She's just so rock and roll.
Yeah, and she also brings back that excellent point around green rooms, particularly around events. Like, there's always, you know, lots of booze around, stuff to keep people up. But actually, sometimes you just want something either more comforting or, as she said brilliantly, just having something that you like to drink.
Yeah.
If you don't want to drink booze, and then you don't have to spend lots of time fretting about it. I really like the Lazy Genius podcast. I'm not sure if she is ADHD, but she was recommended by somebody else who is. One of the things that she says is just being able to make a decision once.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that would just take so much stress out of it, just to know that, oh, there's a kettle, I can get some tea. Marvellous.
Done, yeah.
I've sort of been avoiding going to big events for a while, just because I'm just not feeling super comfortable around people. Like, fine at the theatre, because everybody's quiet and sitting down, technically. But she's really given me some food for thought about being able to enjoy myself and to enjoy why I'm there next time, rather than worrying about what people are thinking, because they're not going to be thinking about me.
Well, this is it. I think this is the big revelation almost in life, is that people are just paying you far less attention than you think they are. You know, as a person who never drank, going to clubs as a teenager, when you are incredibly self-conscious, you know, was a difficult thing. I loved her idea of bringing just sweets with you to the club. I would have loved that. That would have been amazing. I do have to almost flip a mental switch when I'm in a sort of club situation, or even, like, I mean, nowadays we're talking more dancing at a wedding, like just saying, okay, Helen, nobody's going to look at you now. You're just going to go and dance. And telling myself, nobody's going to look at you. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter that you're not the world's best dancer. Obviously, I'm close. I'm like top 10, obviously.
You cut a mean rug at my wedding. It was brilliant.
Thank you very much. You had an amazing band who were playing TV theme tunes. This is absolutely my up my street. We would literally hit the dance floor and dance all night. And it's almost easier to do that than to sort of stop and start and come back off. If you got in a club with a good DJ, obviously DJ Paulette would have been ideal. And you just stay on the floor and you stay with the beat and you just kind of go with it. It's just so much fun.
Paulette's book is a really fascinating history of clubbing, clubland, and has got so many brilliant pictures in it, which I really loved. And actually, whilst I was reading it, as much as I would have loved to think that my book was sort of, you know, comparable in that way, I think yours, Women versus Hollywood, is an amazing comparison in terms of how women have been silenced in the film industry. And not sort of like, oh, shut your lip, but literally having opportunities taken away, having entire careers removed. I think one of the most of the many fascinating things that I learned from your book, and when it was also serialised for Woman's Hour on BBC Radio 4, was that, like, women had absolutely dominated Hollywood as directors, writers, as well as performers before the 1920s. That was astonishing to me. And then as soon as it became, like, successful and something that, you know, men particularly wanted to, or a certain type of man wanted to be involved in, all of that was removed from them.
Yeah, they were literally written out of the history books, which is obviously what DJ Paulette has found as well. So it really is, you know, it's not something people are making up. This is something that actively happened. It's happening nowadays, and I think it's good that we're trying to actively correct that in a lot of cases and put people back in the picture and get back to talking about things. Like, I was reading a fascinating, I mean, thread, not even a proper article, but a thread online during the week about the fact, which I was vaguely aware of, but not in the detail, that women were brewers for most of history. Yes. It was a woman's job to drink, to make beer. And it was mostly a woman's job to drink beer because it was the weakest form of alcohol. So if we're talking, you know, just trying to get yourself drunk, it takes a lot more beer to get a man drunk than a woman drunk. So it would have been a cottage housewives industry. For a long time, whiskey was a cottage housewives industry. And it's when money came into the equation that it became, you know, male dominated, because it became an industry and women weren't allowed to do industries. And the same thing happened with film. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week with small idealistic companies suddenly losing those ideals, maybe when they're bought up by bigger entities. And we have to hope that they will keep those ideals as they get bigger and go forward. But yeah, anyway, I just find DJ Paulette super inspiring in all of that. And I thought, what fun, my God.
Yeah.
I want to go to one of her nights.
No, completely. And she also just reminds us that, you know, history is happening now. It's not something that happened 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And we do need to be alert and aware of it. Terry White, former editor of Empire and a brilliant writer as well, flagged up that the number of women having opportunities behind the scenes in television is just going down and down and down. As directors, as writers and so on. We've also seen a fairly limited number of female directors and writers being nominated at the awards this season. It sort of feels like such a shame that there would be like a fairly decent expansion. And this also goes for people of colour post-2020. But sort of feels like, oh, we did our bit. We had our couple of years where we made an effort with women and people of colour and anybody who didn't look like, you know, Dave over here. And it's just a bit tiring and we don't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's all about keeping up the effort for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
A quick shout out actually for Girls on Film podcast, with which we're not involved particularly. So thank goodness we finally mentioned something we don't do, although I have guested on it before. But that's Anna Smith's podcast. And they have actually announced their own film awards this year, which are entirely for women or non-binary people in the film industry. And they have got an incredible list of nominees because the talent is there. Mm-hmm. So don't sleep on them. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast. I feel like we're getting into the pop culture, you know, culture bit rather than the pop bit, if you like.
This is true. Well, shall we pop into the mailbag?
And oh, see yes, let's see what's do
there.
It.
We have a letter from Steph Jucker. Or Jucker, or Jucker. And Steph, I super apologise for jumbling your name. Hi, Helen and Kat and team. If you have a team? Helen, we're a team.
We're a team, but we do not have a team. God bless you for thinking we might, Steph.
Indeed. Switzerland calling. Oh, we love an international listener. My current favourite drink has been shared before. It's Guinness Zero from the fridge, so I thought I'd share a very short anecdote instead. When I was about a year sober and living in Edinburgh, it was 2012, so there weren't many non-alcoholic drinks options, I went to a pub for drinks with a friend one night. I wanted to get something other than tap water so they would actually make some money. So I ended up drinking 3 cans of Iron Brew, having no idea that it contained caffeine. When I got back home at midnight, I was buzzing with a sugar and caffeine high. It was pretty fun. Also, I have a question for the podcast. What is the shelf life of non-alcoholic beverages like beers, wines or spirits, and are they safe to drink past the expiration date? This is such a great podcast idea, although it took me an embarrassingly long time to get the pun. Anyway, I'm already looking forward to your Christmas episode so we can all share mulled wine recipes. Thank you, bye! Steph. P.S. If you're ever in Switzerland, Schopfer Bleifrei is an excellent alcohol-free beer. P.P.S. ADHD gang fist bump. Fist bump right back, Steph. Amazing. ADHD crew, hurrah. Helen, would you like to explain the pun of pop culture for listeners who may have just thought that we just didn't think it through?
Yes, no. Well, so we are obviously both culture journalists in our sort of day jobs. And pop, of course, is another word for soft drinks, you know, sodas and so on. Have you seen those maps, those fabulous maps, which map where in the US calls it soda and where calls it pop and things like that? And I think there's similar ones for the UK. So if you're from a soda part of the country or similar, I apologise. But yes, we thought pop culture, which was Kat's pun, credit where it's due, was pretty great. And we
can analyse the landscape of pop culture of soft drinks in the same way we analyse the
pop culture landscape.
Entertainment. Yeah. Strokes beard. Helen, what is the shelf life of non-alcoholic drinks?
Look, I am so the wrong person to ask about this, and I'll tell you why. I have a very casual relationship with best before dates. I tend to do the look and the sniff and the, you know, poke a finger in it and see if it moves test for these things. So, yes, if something looks dodgy and is past its best before date, then, of course, I'm not going to eat it all. I'm not a completely crazy person. But if it's still the right color, if it still smells right, if there's no gunky weirdness around the container, I will often ignore the best before day. I will say that. So what I would say is, yes, the sort of shelf life of soft drinks can be shorter than alcoholic drinks, certainly than, you know, wines and spirits and things like that. But it's not necessarily zero. And if it hasn't been opened, if it is in a sealed container, it will probably last a decent amount of time. There are obviously exceptions to this. Cartons of orange juice, I mean, come on, obviously. If it's fizzy, don't drink it. That's bad. Generally speaking, if it's in a can, it's going to last for quite some time. So you can probably, like I say, be a bit wary if it's past the best before date, but don't necessarily immediately chuck it out without having a look. That would be my personal approach. I will say, however, that some of the non-alcoholic spirits that I've tried in the past, so I had a bottle of, it would have been Seed Lip, I guess, which I took a bit from, and then I used up all the tonic I had in the house, and I never think to buy tonic because why would I? It's a bit useless on its own. So I forgot to buy any more, and so the bottles sat there in the cupboard in much the way that I keep half bottles of rum that I've bought for making a cake in the cupboard. And it did eventually develop a gross skin. And I did throw that away, obviously. That did not pass the sniff or look test. So they will not last forever in the same way that some of those half bottles of gin have absolutely lasted forever in my cupboard. But yeah, I would not necessarily live your life one best before day at a time.
And she's a lawyer, ladies and gentlemen. So oh, I'm going to take this
as my own lawyer. Please don't take that as gospel.
We also had a message from Max K over on Instagram, where Ooh. We are Pop Culture Drinks Podcast. Max says, Centaur is worth checking out. Very interesting, as it's a bit more science-based than a booze-free beer or something like that. I'm not that into beer tasting things, so I'm always looking out for stuff that actually tastes nice. This one's botanical and engages with your brain to get that nice, calm feeling that people chase with drink, but without feeling crap or out of control, etc. Left-Handed Giant are a great Bristol brewery who do a Radler that's 0%, really nice and not beer-like at all, worth checking out. I'm so glad the smaller breweries are providing options, as places like Brewdog always get mentioned in the convo. They're not someone I'd be pushing. Great podcast, by the way. I'm similar to Helen in the way that I've just not been a drinker, and it's so nice to see the world catching up with us all a bit, and there being options and awareness now. I'm sick of brands like Coca-Cola being the only options. Well, Max, you'll be delighted to hear that actually on next week's podcast, we have an interview with Professor David Nutt, who is the brains behind Centaur, and also just a total legend. If you've never heard of him before, please Google him. Please listen to his actually now fairly old episode of BBC's The Life Scientific, but he's just absolutely amazing. He's done so much work to find people alternatives to alcohol and to find ways of, like, really just not undoing, but being able to prevent some of the damage that can come from extended alcohol use. And he's also great fun. Also, a lovely shout out for Left-Handed Giant. Thank you very much. I've also got to Google what a Radler is.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was hoping you knew.
No, I sort of feel
like... Is this a kind of beer? Is this like an IPA
beer, but
or a thing?
Also that doesn't taste like beer.
Yeah, that is intriguing to me.
A dream. Going into my Google hole as we speak. No, that's come back with Shandy. That's absolutely no help at all. What the hell is a Radler? Oh, here we go. A Radler was originally two parts beer, usually a lager or another lighter type, mixed with one part lemonade or a lemon-lime soda. Of course, curious brewers eventually began experimenting with other juices and sodas. And in the case of oldyalebrewing.com, from whence this information comes, fruity teas, which sounds really nice. OK, so we can add that to
the very long list of things we need to experiment with.
Perfect. Love a list. That'll be very
amazing.
Good. Which also means we're just going to have to get, we've got a future guest who's an expert in all things beer. And that, Helen, might be the time when we get you tasting some.
It's going to have to happen. I am resigned, as it were. But it's lovely to see, you know, small breweries doing so much to actually experiment and take risks and take chances. I mean, we obviously heard about it two weeks ago from the gang at MASH, but also there's so many out there who are doing so much interesting stuff. We also had a couple of messages on Twitter, one from Jordan King, at Jordan MB King, who says, current soft drink obsession is Suso. Mm. That stands for stand up, stand out, in case you were wondering. The orange and mandarin is just the sweetest, most refreshing drink in a can I think I've ever drunk. I can't get enough. One for pop culture to investigate. And actually a friend of mine at Dapper Dan responded going, I had these at the craft services on a film set he was on, and I can concur, they're the best. The apple and elderflower one is my personal favourite. So two different flavours to try. Hurrah!
I can feel my credit card twitching, Helen. Orders are going to have to be had.
And then in response to last week's discussion about BrewDog, at Kieran Lee 1970 said, I was at the BrewDog pre-open night in Perth, drinking all their beer and food for free, really sticking it to the man. I mean, I'm not sure that's exactly what we suggested, but thank you, Kieran, I guess, for that.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week. I can see the sun is set, the clouds are drawing in. It's time to go home and find something to watch on the television before sliding into bed. If you've got a favourite drink you'd like to share with us or any other non-booze-related gossip, then you can email us at popculturedrinkspodcast@gmail.com, and you can see what and where we've been drinking lately on Instagram at popculturedrinkspodcast. And don't forget, pop culture is on bookshop.org. You can read our books, our guests' books, and other books we like. While helping to support the show, just go to bookshop.org and search for Pop Culture Soft Drinks Podcast.
And that's it from us this week. So thank you so much for joining us. Do let us know if you have any suggestions or comments about the show. And yeah, keep on drinking. I'll see you next time.
Keep on drinking. Is that going to be our slogan?
I mean, that's all I got, I'll be honest. It's. I was up very late last night. I didn't get to bed until this morning, Kat.
What?
I know. It's at least 10 hours past my normal bedtime.
And non-drinking hours, that basically means you've been up for about 3 days. Okay, fine. This week, our slogan will be keep on drinking. Uh-huh. Keep on drinking. It's just like we're Strictly.
Basically that.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.